Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how do you like your mind? Is it your best friend? What has your mind done for you lately? Maybe it hasn't done enough. We're going to find out more about our wonderful minds and what kind of friends they are, or not. To do that, we're going to talk to Barbara Berger, who's the author of many books, and her new book, The Awakening Human Being, A Guide to the Power of Mind. Sounds just like what we want to talk about. So Barbara Berger, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you. It's lovely to be back again. I really enjoyed talking to you, Peter. We always have such a great connection.
Yes, we do, because our minds think alike.
Well, sometimes.
Well, as far as we know.
As far as we know, right? We're on the same wavelength at times.
Right. Well, you know, since you live in Denmark, maybe we'd find a lot more dissonance if we lived closer.
Or maybe not.
Maybe not. I know. I so enjoy talking with you. So let's keep going in that wonderful way. So what is it about our minds? Aren't they our best friends?
Well, I have been studying this for many, many years and written quite a few books about it, the way our minds work. And I have understood that most of us are actually unconscious about the nature of mind and the way our minds work. And that when we look at our minds and we explore how they work and we have a better understanding of our minds, it's actually the key to freedom, because we discover that what we focus our attention on, the way that we use our minds, that determines our experience in life. In other words, you could say the principle really is that we have what I call reality, whatever's happening in your life, the situation, the events, the people, whatever's going on, that's what I mean by reality. And then we have our thoughts, the way we relate to what's going on. In other words, our interpretation of this event, this person, this situation. And it's our interpretation that determines our experience, not actually what's going on. And if we observe, we can see that if you have the same event, the same situation, and you have 10 different people are present, you will probably have 10 different experiences of the exact same event. And so if we slow things down and we look at this, we start to understand that things happen, but our thoughts, our interpretations of what's going on, that's what determines our experience. So you could say that thought is cause and experience is the effect of our interpretation of what's going on. And most people don't get that yet.
And I guess one of the keys is to learn how our minds interpret things, mm-hmm. and, you know, learn about our minds better, mm-hmm. so we can see how perhaps objective or subjective we are.
Yes, it's all subjective.
How conditioned we are.
Not all conditioned.
Well, that's fun.
So I have, so in the first half of this book, I have what I have developed, which I call the mental laws. And I have been developing this for many, many years and teaching it for many, many years here in Scandinavia. And people have been wildly excited about the mental laws, because it's a simple, very sort of straightforward scientific explanation of the way our minds work that anyone who is willing to read it and test these observations for themselves will be able to confirm that this is actually the way things function, the setup.
But can you imagine with teaching children? Because really what it is to learn about your mind is to learn about how we are.
Exactly.
Not what we are, not our minds, but how we are.
Exactly.
And to understand how we are allows us to process life so much more clearly.
And well, I've because I've been lecturing and doing workshops with this material for so many years, I mean, I have had so many people say to me that, oh, we should be teaching this in school, and they want their kids to learn it. Because, in other words, the sooner that you become friends with the mechanism of mind, the sooner that you understand it, the more you understand it, the more you can use it for your own benefit.
The more you can understand others, too.
Well, others and especially yourself. But I mean,
but to know that all the other people out there are coming from the same place.
Yeah.
And they have their own conditions and prejudices and all kinds of mechanics working in their minds.
Exactly.
That they can't help until they know better. Mm. And even then, they can only know better. They can only help it if they know better to help it. Because you can talk to people all day long.
Well, the thing is that the first basic observation in the mental laws, there are 10 mental laws in the book. The first observation is, I suggest that the reader doesn't believe anything that I write, that they test it for themselves. And the first observation is, I suggest that the reader sits down in front of a white wall. It should be a wall that has nothing on it. And look at this white wall and then say to themselves, I'm not going to think. And you have to try it yourself, and you will find out that it's not possible, that you cannot stop thinking. You may be able to do it for, if you've been meditating a lot, you might be able to do it for 30 seconds or maybe a minute. But what you will see is that thoughts arise and they disappear. That's the nature of mind. It's not something that we're doing. It's happening to us.
I was once in a situation in a machine that actually blocked my thinking for a half an hour.
Really?
And right.
Well, how did it do that?
It was a very advanced consciousness machine that was programmed. And so I was in it, and I couldn't have any clear thoughts other than the one thought I kept having was, I'm not having any thoughts.
Okay, so you were having thoughts.
Yes, exactly. So I'm agreeing with you. But I couldn't get beyond the fact
You were having a thought that you weren't. So, but anyway, that's a perfect for the, because the next law is, then I say, okay, so the first law is to notice that thoughts arise and they disappear. That's the nature of mind. But then the second law is to go back and sit in front of the white wall again and notice the thoughts arise and they disappear. The first thought is, oh, I forgot to buy milk in the supermarket. And the next thought, that disappears. And then the next thought is what my partner said to me in bed last night, or then what my colleague said at work, or what I heard on the news. You will see that the thoughts, they arise and they disappear. But then the question is, who is it who is observing that? So in other words, this is the law of witnessing and the law of understanding the nature of mind, that you can actually sit in front of the white wall and you can watch your thoughts come and you can watch them go. And then another thought comes and then another thought goes, but you're still there.
Right. So, to think of who's having the thoughts is also
So in other words, this is the great, I mean, this is what meditation is about, and this is what the great awakening is actually about, to understand. I mean, this is such an important revelation, that you are not your thoughts. Most people are so identified with their thoughts, with their stories, they haven't yet understood that they are the field of consciousness in which the thoughts arise and disappear.
Right. And the whole idea is that we don't plan our thoughts.
No, that they are arising and disappearing. And the more identified you are with them, which most people are, the more they are determining your experience. But if we can have this experience of understanding that the thoughts arise and they disappear, and that we're the witness, that we're the watcher, that we're the presence in which they arise and disappear, this this knowledge, this understanding is the key to freedom, because it means that then you can observe your own thoughts and you can also find out, are these the thoughts that I want to think, since they're going to determine the way I experience things. So that's the key to all this mental training that I teach people, that if you want to change your experience, you have to look at the thoughts that you're entertaining, because your focus determines your experience. And then you can perhaps with practice change the focus of your attention and thus change your experience.
So, and that's what the latter part of your book is about.
Exactly. The latter part is all the practical applications of these mental laws, which is the first part. But the latter part, all the practical exercises, they work much better if you understand the mechanism. If you understand why you are doing these different exercises, the results will be much more powerful for you.
Yes, because, and we might know we need to do it.
Yes.
We're not happy about the way our thoughts are manifesting in our lives.
Exactly. So you could say that if we know that what we focus our attention on, and then what we focus on with conviction, in other words, what you believe, what you focus on with conviction, that will determine your experience in every situation. But when you know that you can observe these thoughts and you can ask yourself, is this appropriate? Is this relevant? Is this true? Is this the way I want to experience life? Then you have the freedom, perhaps, to choose a better thought, to choose a better approach, to choose a better way to relate to whatever's going on.
And that's also about conditioning. So in other words, the idea is to know that we need to change our conditioning.
So it is all about conditioning.
Thoughts, because since we can't control our thoughts, we can only control the conditioning that influences our thoughts.
I wouldn't say it quite like you said it. I would probably say that we are, our conditioned response is a way of thinking. In other words, we're programmed with responses in our childhood that, you know, the collective beliefs, the personal beliefs, the beliefs of our family, that this is good, this is less good, we're programmed with all these belief systems, but most of us are so identified with them that we don't see it. We think that's who we are. But
so
once
we're reconditioning to a different belief system.
Exactly. So once we can observe it, and we can't do anything about anything we're not aware of, but once we're able to step back and observe what we're actually doing, okay, I have this belief system about this. Once we can identify it, then we can also ask ourselves, does this have anything to do with reality? Who set this standard for me? Do I want to live according to this, the consequences that it has? There are many questions that sort of follow in the wake of understanding that it's a belief system, that it's not written in stone.
Right. Now, there's another aspect to this, though, that I find is relevant to my life, and that's because I also work with this, has to do with the template we're born into, not the family.
Yeah, okay.
Born into a template of different ways of managing our reality,
mm-hmm.
and in ways that aren't just the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it has to do with just personality, with our sensitivities, how sensitive some people are versus others.
And okay, but just wait a minute there. When you say it has to do with our personality, you have to define that a little better. What do you mean by personality?
So some people are born to be more fearful. Some people are born to be more dynamic or more assertive. And it's not conditioned. It's, you know, because you can have a family with all the kids have the same conditions around them, the same parents.
That's true.
Same things, and each kid will be different.
So what you're really talking about is, I don't know if you're familiar with the work of David Hawkins, but the calibration level of the soul coming in other words, the vibrational frequency, the evolutionary development of each soul is different.
Well, that's part of it, yes.
Yeah. And that what you, yeah.
But it's also personality. that you've come in with that you might be someone who worries too much.
Yeah, but again, so I think maybe your definition of personality is different from mine. I would define it as the learned behavior, the ego, whereas you're talking about personality as if it's characteristics that you bring from previous lifetime. I'm not quite sure.
It could be the genes of your grandparents. It's innate in you to respond differently than your siblings might be responding. Mm-hmm. Like. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter about the conditioning, you're still going to respond in your own different way.
It's certainly true of me and the family I was born into. Okay, so I certainly can't say no to that, but I probably would explain it slightly differently than you do. But it's definitely my own experience was I was born into a family, and it was like I was born into another planet. I mean, I was so different from everyone, and I knew things that none of them knew, and I was like completely an alien. So I certainly can relate.
I work with the human design system, which uses birth data and the Chinese I Ching, and mm-hmm. it really explains us to ourselves in these templates that we're born to. So we can understand why we're so unique, and each person is, of course, in their mm-hmm. own way. And then that allows us to understand how vulnerable or not we are to conditioning, mm-hmm. or what kinds of conditioning we're vulnerable to that other people aren't.
Very interesting. I think I need a consultation with you, because that's certainly been my experience. But definitely. Again, so the mental laws that are explained in this book, anyway, if we go back to that, they are directly dealing with the programming.
Yes.
That we experience in this lifetime. I'm not really discussing or dealing with what you're talking about in this book at all.
Although that plays a role in it, only because
I understand that. I understand that
each person is conditioned differently. Depending on that template. So the value of this is to understand the nature of mind, understand mm-hmm. the nature of reality that our mind is influenced by.
Well, I think that the most valuable of the tools that I have learned, again, from teaching and coaching people for so many years, is that when people start to understand that the focus of their attention determines their experience, for whatever reason, as you say, whatever the background is that determines that focus. But once you can see that mechanism, in other words, people who complain a lot, they usually have a lot to complain about, because the focus of their attention, it energizes that experience. Whereas people who are filled with appreciation and gratitude, they have a lot to appreciate and are happy about in their life. So it's this self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, you have a law of cause and effect. And and so the mind's law of responding and then creating. And what I've always said, though, is that however we're designed, life meets our design. In other words,
yeah.
Life isn't going to be any different for us yeah. than who we're supposed to be.
Yeah, there are expectations, yeah.
Right, so it's always true. So yeah. when our thoughts actually create the reality around us, even though we can't control those thoughts, we can understand them, we can watch them, we can be the witness.
Well, I actually have evolved a bit beyond. I wouldn't actually say anymore that our thoughts create the reality. I think it's a little more subtle. I'd probably say our thoughts create our experience of that reality. Because you can have different people standing in the exact same situation. And for example, if you see a homeless person on the street, on the corner, begging when you go out, I mean, it's the same person who's standing there. The one person could see, focused on the divinity of that soul and you know, feel compassion and love for this person. Another person could walk by and be really angry that I've got this homeless person begging on my corner. It's still the same person there, but depending on what you...
Right.
to it. That's you're not creating the reality in that sense, but you're creating your experience of that.
But what it is two things. One is that you're conditioned in some ways, for instance, to be prejudiced. There are prejudicial societies that everybody hates in ways that they weren't born to hate.
No, exactly.
They were taught to hate. And yet there are people who were born to fall into that, to be conditioned by that much easier. Mm. And so that's why 10 different people can see something, the same thing in different ways.
Exactly.
But that's what I mean by that the reality meets our soul.
Yeah, that you see, you sort of draw out what corresponds to your frequency, you
exactly.
could say.
Yeah. And then your frequency then expresses it in new and different ways that keep it going.
Exactly. It's self-reinforcing.
Yes.
Mm. So it's fascinating, isn't it? Fascinating. So in other words, so we're all living in our own unique mental universe.
Right. That we can use all of these laws and all the focus points and all the things in your book to work with it successfully because we all can allow ourselves to be newly conditioned by how to use our minds better.
Well, one of the things I have noticed, because I train people to use these laws, is that the people who actually practice the exercises, their life experience drastically changes. I mean, that they have amazing transformations.
Yeah, that's great.
And I mean, it's so self-empowering, so liberating. People, I mean, I've had people who have come to me, you know, suicidal, deep depression, and in an amazingly short time are happy with their lives again.
You've changed their conditioning.
Exactly. I've helped them change their conditioning.
Well, that's it. I mean,
this explanation has given them the key to, first of all, to understanding what they were doing. And because they have been so miserable, it's really the ones who are so miserable, they're willing to give it a try. And then the results are it's just like, wow, what happened to me? I have people call me up and say, Barbara, what happened to me? What did you do to me? And I say, I didn't do anything. You did it.
You changed law number 8, underlying beliefs. So all of a sudden, they see themselves and life differently.
They do.
And you give them tools. You give them focusing tools. You help them understand themselves better, so that they feel more powerful in being who they want to be.
Because it's so wonderful to see that happen. It's really such a pleasure for me to be a facilitator of that kind of transformation. It's just...
Yeah. I know. Life is wonderful when we can help people. And you and I have dedicated our lives to that.
Right.
And so our minds can be helped in so many ways. But we almost have to treat our mind as somebody else.
Definitely.
That we have to take care of.
but it's really interesting that you say it like that, because I would say it's not that I am my mind, but that I have a mind. So in other words, if we can step back and witness it, you could say it's like this little puppy we have. So it's true, because it's, I mean, that's why the Buddhists, for example, they call it the monkey mind. You know, it's going up and down and up and down. And so it's chattering all the time, the mind, the monkey mind.
Then it's interesting, because I've been working on this all my life. My template isn't an easy template to live with. And I worry too much. And I know, because I can use the Byron Katie truths, the questions, and know that it's not my mind, right? that I can answer all the questions, but my feelings have to be managed. And so that's has a life of its own, and I work with a lot of people that way who might know better in so many ways. But there's this gnawing under, you know, current of struggles and feelings about it. But it's satisfied by the mind knowing better.
But I, as far as I hear what you're saying, I mean, I think, I don't know if you're familiar with Eckhart Tolle's concept of the pain body. I mean, the difference between sort of the rational mind and the repository of learned behavior and feelings that we have, sort of that energy.
And it's more, it's even more than that. I know for me, for instance, what shook up my life terribly when I was 17 was my father's unexpected death. And it was, life never was stable again after that.
So that was a very traumatic experience. Right,
but also my template was vulnerable to that. So I know that. So I use tools, and we'll talk more about that, because you have that in your focus also, is, you know, how do we work with ourselves to manage? And, you know, and so like yesterday was a tough day about feeling, you know, having this undercurrent of a struggling feeling that I worked with my tools and feel wonderful today.
Okay. So you could pull yourself out of it.
I know how to do that. I know, you know, how to
manage. That's excellent.
So that's the point, is, you know, to address people's weak points and give them opportunities to work with it so that they can be happy. And you do that in your way, I do it in my way, and and people really, you know, are changed by it. So it's great, you know, that we can talk about all this. We're getting a little late in the interview, so you know, and we have talked previously that we want to talk some more.
Okay, Matt, let me just say to our listeners that we're offering on my website a free ebook, which is the mental laws that you and I have been talking about. The first part of this book, The Awakening Human Being, is called The Mental Laws. And if you go to my website, which is beamteam.com, beamteam.com, you will see on the front page where you can click, and we'll send you this ebook if you'd like to have this as an introduction to my work. It's free, so please.
And they can also purchase The Awakening Human Being.
Yes, you can do that. You can do it on the website. You can also buy that on Amazon and everywhere else. So
good. It's always so much fun to talk with you. And
you know, we get so excited about all this stuff. Yeah, but also because what's more exciting than self-empowerment? And self-empowerment comes from more clarity, greater understanding. I mean, there's nothing that I'm more passionate about. It's just wonderful. I mean,
that's why I'm so glad that I've met you. And we'll
likewise
more. So, so we have your URL, people can, and I want to thank you for being a guest on Energy Stew.
I want to thank you for inviting me. Respect, Peter.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. And my website is heartriver.org. And I'd love to hear from you. And thanks so much for listening. Thank you.